Peace, love, and peace, guys. Stay tuned for CKN's own award-winning programming, Word of Mouth. I'm Addy.
Hello, and welcome to Wednesday Word of Mouth. I am Robin Yeto here with Daniel Libby at the helm at Ryerson University in the heart of Toronto Centre, where the by-election is heating up as folks here go to the polls tomorrow to elect their member of provincial parliament. At least rich folks, that is. It seems that Elections Ontario forgot to put polls in St. Jamestown. The provincial electoral authority put only 3 polling stations in an area with 15,000 people. Right here, in this riding. We'll be speaking to Edward Lance, a resident of St. Jamestown, who will tell us all about it. And the fight to save Grey Street Hospital, just up the street here on Church, seems to have paid off during this election, as the provincial government has promised to inject $15 million to save the hospital from closure. More on what elections can deliver when the future of the ruling party is at stake, right here on Wednesday Word of Mouth, 88.1 FM.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Robin. Thanks a lot. And the other things we got going on the show, we got a few clips of Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister's speech at Davos that took place on the weekend. So we're going to play those a bit later on in the show. And I think first off, it'd be good to get into the latest commentary from Mumia Abu-Jamal that just came out today before we try to get our first guest on the phone. So here is the words from Mumia Abu-Jamal on the topic of a year in more same than change.
A year in more same than change. With his State of the Union address showing more disunion than unity, President Barack Obama marked more than the passing of his first year in office. It marked the passing of a great opportunity as his party lost a signal seat in the Senate, and with it an opportunity to forestall filibusters or the spectacle of endless debate on various issues, among them health care and climate change legislation. It also marked something else, how an administration armed with an overwhelming congressional majority could not achieve its goals and faces serious challenges ahead. Those challenges aren't all domestic. Overseas, the administration pursues a policy of continuity of the Bush regime with heightened bombings via predator drones, continued secret prisons, legal defense of torture, permanent detentions, and the erection of frameworks that look a lot like more wars abroad. In a number of off-the-record interviews, many former Bush officials are quietly impressed with how similar the new officials are with the old. That's because the imperial idea permeates both parties, and how a party runs is no indication of how it will govern. And both parties are held tightly in the grip of the military-industrial complex. In Greek mythology, Hercules fought the many-headed Hydra. In America, political parties are heads attached to a vast corporate body, which funds both sides so that it can profit from each. The media, itself an arm of mega corporate power, feeds the fear industry so that people are primed like pumps to support wars on rumor, innuendo, legends, and lies. In Britain, at least, there has been a parliamentary inquiry into the events that led to the Iraq War. Some members of parliament, like Sir Menzies Campbell, a liberal Democrat, have said the Iraq War was an illegal war, while others have called it war crimes. In the U.S., such issues like single payer for healthcare, for example, are off the table. And how could they be on the table if the administration is continuing the war and intensifying another? Millions of Americans voted not just against former President Bush's legacy, but against war itself. They've no doubt learned a year later that you often don't get what you voted for. Perhaps they've also learned that voting for change in this corporate-controlled system can give you the same old thing. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio. Thank you.
are back at Wednesday Word of Mouth, just putting up the levels, and we're heading into an interview now with Edward Lance. He lives at St. Jamestown, and he's here to tell us about what's going on with the polling stations there. How come the Elections Ontario, which is the provincial electoral authority, why they only put 3 polling stations to serve 15,000 people? Is that normal? Let's go to Edward Lance now, who I believe is on the line. Hello, Edward.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. So, Edward, tell us what's going on in St. Jamestown.
Well, you've kind of hit the nail right on the head. I mean, what we're looking at right now with the population of St. Jamestown is roughly 15,000 people, and we only have 3 polling stations for a large density of people. Now, in regards to a good percentage of the voters in that housing complex and in throughout those buildings, a good number of those voters are disabled. So for them to get up in the morning and get dressed is already a real chore for them. Now, to ask them to go several blocks, say, in inclement weather, then that's totally not really fair. I mean, you've got to serve the public. You're, as far as I'm concerned, that's denying these individuals their democratic right to get out and vote because of the inaccessibility of the polling stations. They're about 2 to 3 blocks away, and as I say, a good majority of voters are disabled, and, you know, to get out in any kind of weather is difficult for them to begin with. So to go and vote acts as a deterrent to their democratic right. On the opposite side, over on Bay Street, in 3 buildings consisting of only 902 tenants, you have 3 polling stations, and you have a polling station each in each one of those buildings that's in the lobby or a common area that's very accessible, very easy to reach, no matter what your medical condition might be. So they have more of an advantage, and where a population of 15,000 with 3 polling stations is far too short for, you know, or far too less than what people actually need. And that's the basis of the argument in regards to Elections Ontario.
So, Edward, I'd like to know how long has this been going on where folks of St. Jamestown have only gotten this limited number of polls?
Well, primarily with that and the fact that, you know, in the previous by-election, there was only 2 in the previous by-election, and that's simply not enough. You've got a heavily populated area, and what it suggests to me, it suggests that Ontario Elections or Elections Ontario is not facilitating the voters in this downtown Toronto Centre riding.
And I guess the next, that would lead to the next question, well, why isn't Ontario, Elections Ontario, doing the job that they should be doing with the folks in St. Jamestown?
Well, it's only common sense that when you have such a high density of people, the first thing that would come to any person in regards to how to apply the polling stations, if you've got a high population, put in more polling stations. Even if you don't put one in every building, if you could get at least one in every other building so that a person living in, say, 275 Bleecker Street could walk over to the 325 Bleecker, which is only a half a block away, as opposed to having to go 2.5 blocks to the Wellesley Community Centre, which is at Wellesley and Sherbourne, and we've got people having to travel all the way from almost just south of Bloor all the way down to that polling station to do the voting. And that, it just, as far as I'm concerned, it should have been looked into prior to this. Elections Ontario has a fair amount of a budget that they can accommodate all people that live in St. Jamestown without any question whatsoever.
So now, tomorrow is the election. Is there still time for Elections Ontario to do something about this situation?
No, it's a little too short in that regard. I mean, but it's for them to take note that, you know, to serve the electorate, not only in the provincial by-election, like this by-election, but any kind of election, it is their responsibility because they are a wing of the government, so to speak, and they should be accommodating all voters in all elections and making absolutely sure that they have, an accessible voting station nearby. And that doesn't mean necessarily wheelchair accessible. That should be common as well. But the bottom line is that making it available for all voters to exercise their democratic right. So the onus is upon them to look into the situation, see the heavily populated areas, and to apply the proper polling stations per area.
Edward Lance, I want to thank you for joining us in the program tonight. I really appreciate your time.
Right. Well, I thank you for having me on. And with all due respect, perhaps the next election, whether it be Elections Ontario or Elections Canada, they take note and they provide proper polling stations so all Canadians and all Ontarians have an opportunity to exercise their democratic right.
Thank you, Edward.
Thank you very much, and I love CKLN, by the way.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
Right, bye-bye.
Okay, that was Edward Lance. He lives in St. Jamestown. He was talking to us about why about the fact that there's only three polling stations in an area of 15,000 people. That's really quite surprising, almost shocking, because the government every election has and organizations have these programs where they try to teach people election type education so that they can go out and vote. They try to do the same thing with young folk. I don't know if you know these programs there, Daniel, about, you know, these programs trying to get folks to get out there and vote. But if you don't have polling stations, how do you get people to go out and vote? You know?
Yeah, good question.
All right.
Good question, Robin. And we'll be back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. We got a lot of stuff going on today. The big election's going on tomorrow. Toronto Centre, local listeners, you can get out and vote if you are registered to vote. And we got our call-in line, 416-979-5251, extension 0, if you got any words on the election. And we'll just throw it to music break, and then we'll be right back. If you got anything to say, just give us a call or stay tuned for Word of Mouth Wednesday, because we'll be back with more content with the music track. Right now, we're going to go to the track "Free Mumia" by KRS-One.
For the people at Free Mumia
Channel Live,
KRS-One coming to represent.
Free Mumia.
Everywhere I look, there's another house Negro talking about their people. How they should be eating. They're talking, but the conversation ain't going nowhere. You can't diss hip-hop, so don't you even go there. See Dolores Tucker, you want to quote the scripture? Every time you hear nigga, well,
listen up, sister.
I met up with this girl named Dolores, a prankster. I said, I MC, she said, you're a gangster. But she was caught up. She hit the floor like a break dance. Wrapped her up like the arms in the B-boy stance. Recognize, mom, I'm one of your sons. I'm hip-hop in the form of Channel 9, the KRS-One. Representing MCs across America. She said, you're the one who be causing all that mass hysteria.
Wisdom shall come out of the mouths of babes and suckling, but you're blinded by cultural ignorance and steady judging. But judge not, least he may be judged. For the judge me, he judge. Ye shall surely be judged who gets no love.
She said, I like it, that's why I jock it. Then I said, you only on my back because I fill brothers' pockets. Got them driving Benzes, Jeeps, and Rolls Royces. Attacking me would leave you with no voices. The choice is yours, not mine. Hang with me. I have you freestyle and bombing graffiti. Cut it up like wax, claiming I caused violence, but America was violent before rap. Facts.
Warner, Electra, Atlantic equals
we are.
Instead of fighting them, why don't you go free for
me?
Warner, Electra, Atlantic equals
we are.
Instead of fighting them, why don't you go free for me?
On recital, I kicks the vital, like the final goal. As I watch Babylon fall, I had to rush Limbaugh, hit that pig with an axe. Stuffy dips through the side, fucking cannon at bat. Because he censored the uses of the metaphor. Because it's you that brings up real horrorcore. Expenditures be getting cut from the war.
Why, sure. Back before we were born, they sold us out. Yeah, Jay Jackson, we know what you about. He's a slave mason, not a Freemason. Before long, the God is Tiamat through hip-hop will be racing. Don't stop me, because I'll be the lyricist. At the 1999 Millennium Party held at Giza, saying he's a fraud. Oh, my God, it's never in your life you should disrespect an artist. Focus your attention on astronomy and the up and coming, shifting the economy. If you can't do that, then heed the final call to free Mumia Abu Jamal.
Hate to be so rough, it could be the white owls. House niggas are full of crap like my Colin Powell. Kicking vowels is how we relieve the tension. Until we start to bounce white people like suspension. You paint the pictures, the black men on the corner. But tell me, who blew up Oklahoma? The city, ain't no pity. The beast, that's Hakeem, that voice from the east.
Warner, Electra, Atlantic.
could be the plot of a chicken. Definition is what you're missing. Listen to your children instead of dissing them. Senator Dole doesn't understand the young one. Like they be saying want to, but we be saying want. They're getting dumber every summer as they walk the road, mainly because they cannot understand the world.
In actuality, this moment-based mentality always seems to represent minus 360%, 4 degrees, full circle, dead from the purple rays of the sun. I got melanin, so check it. Bagging nuts quicker, get sick from being naked, suspected. Was it the means for the end, for just a view to drive a Benz while you eat the big skin? Searching into mannequins is the trick of technology and revelation. Revelation, sensation gives me inspiration, a revolution. That's my solution, there will be no sequels. I'm out 144,000 with my people.
From Caligula to Hitler, now it's Schwarzenegger. A lust for the violence is the science of their behavior, you enslaved them. But the god of virtuosity, another world created, could it be mental side of me? Got my mind twisted like the veins of Montelupe. I sit in disbelief as he crawls underneath. The rock cocked back the Glock, cause I don't trust the devil. I rebel until Babylon is dust.
Warner, Electra, Atlantic equals Freedom. Instead of fighting them, why don't you go free with me? Warner, Electra, Atlantic equals Freedom. Instead of fighting them, why don't you go free with me?
Word of mouth, Wednesday. We're back here on the show. Daniel Libby here. Robin Yentl's in the booth, and we are talking about a lot of different topics tonight. We just played that track there by KRS-One. We played, to start off the show, too, a commentary there by Mumia Abu-Jamal. One thing I want to mention, I checked the PartisanDefense.org site, the website. The Partisan Defense Committee has been dedicated to focusing on the Mumia Abu-Jamal case, and their latest posting has to do with the Supreme Court ruling, the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that discarded a previous ruling by a judge that was going to had affected the case. So they've thrown that out, and now it's Mumia's in a bad spot right now. So you just gotta keep on looking out for more information on that. We'll probably have some more updates in the future, and we'll keep playing the commentaries for sure. We just wanted to get into a few different topics though, because we have the election, the local election going on tomorrow, which is Thursday, February the 4th. By election, it was called 1 month ago after the local area MPP George Smitherman mentioned that he was going to be running for mayor, or decided he's going to run for mayor. And he resigned his seat for MPP. So now a month later, here we are. Voting day is tomorrow. So we want to hear from the local, any local residents or anybody that has anything to say about this election. You can give us a call at 416-979-5251, extension 0. The phone lines are open if you have anything to say on the Word of Mouth Wednesday.
That's 416-979-5251, extension 0. And just to give you a bit of a recap of what's going on, the candidates for this by-election, the Liberals are running former Winnipeg Mayor Glenn Murray, the New Democrats are running street nurse Kathy Crow, and the Conservative Party is running Pamela Taylor. And we will give you more information about the Green Party as that comes in.
Yeah.
So, but what we wanted to talk to you about is the Gray Street Hospital, because this was one of the most popular issues that came out during this by-election. It is really interesting because within 1 week, the future of the Toronto Grace Hospital was uncertain. Then there was a rally to save it. I mean, I think these were within days. The issue was getting hotter and hotter. It seemed that, you know, the provincial government had already said that they weren't going to spend any more money on health care because they have a $25 billion deficit, and they said they wouldn't do it. And then, as it seems that the issue wasn't dying down and folks were getting angrier and angrier and more organized around it during this election here in Toronto Centre, it seems that today the Liberal government just announced $15 million for this hospital.
Wow.
A $50 million coming from, Daniel, coming from not like what they said, they weren't going to give anything. They were going to give the big goose egg to healthcare in Ontario.
Right.
But during a by-election, things can happen. Things can happen. So if you have an opinion, or at least not an opinion, but tell us what you think. It's 416-979-5251, extension 0. This is your by-election here in Toronto Centre. CKLN, our signal is strongest here in Toronto Centre.
All right.
So we give out the line to folks here in Toronto Centre.
Yeah, for sure. And when you mentioned that about that hospital, made me think of some of the stuff that Kathy Crowe was mentioning in the clip. We played a clip last week of Kathy Crowe, and she was mentioning how what she's seen is that the big focus on the medical part on the province, the provincial Liberal Party, has been on this on e-health, or she's noticed a lot of spending on that, which I know involves something with the electronic, making the records electronic.
And $1 billion in spending. And wow. And folks are like, okay, well, what happened to it? Okay, fine. $1 billion is a lot of money, but, well, what happened? Well, where is it?
Right. There was that big corruption.
$1 billion and
because that guy,
nothing.
Yeah, the previous health minister had to resign, though, over corruption with that, right? Or he had to step down as health minister.
Yeah, it's... let's just say that the Liberals, which is the ruling party right now, they're not, we can go down the list in terms of, disappointments.
Mm-hmm.
That's HST, e-health scandal.
And now this privatization, but this possible selling of provincial assets, that's something.
That's right, LCBO,
where they got
Toronto Hydro,
Goldman Sachs, and CIBC as
Ontario Power Generation.
Pricing it out, right.
What else was there? There's more actually. There is more disappointment there. You know, oh yeah. Let's not forget that they have this $25 billion deficit.
Yeah.
And then promises that they're
$24.7 billion.
Yeah.
24/7.
So
paying that one off.
You know, we got a lot of issues happening in the province, and don't forget that we have almost a 10% official unemployment rate in Toronto.
Right. Right.
And yet, you know, we don't have much in the way of a plan as to how we're going to get out of this, because supposedly we're undergoing an economic recovery.
Right. Well, see, there's some interesting stuff going on federally. I mean, this is a clip that I just saw. I just saw this one on the weekend. I was watching Question Period. I knew I had to take it down just because it really got into, you know, what I've been thinking about the federal Liberal Party or the Michael Ignatieff priorities. Here's Michael Ignatieff. Here's what he had to say this weekend on the CTV Question
this
Period
show.
This
government needs to get Canadians back to
so
work.
There's no
and
way
focus
you want to go
employment.
On a campaign and say we might have to have tax increases. You've decided, your advisors decided, you're not touching that one.
Hey, nobody's talking about election campaigns. Nobody's talking about campaigns. What I'm talking about is I'm dealing with a situation I'm faced with. And right now, when I listen to the hard-pressed Canadian middle class, they're saying to me, we're struggling our way out here. Don't increase the burdens on our shoulders.
So I just highlighted that clip just because of the quote there where he mentions twice that they're not talking about campaigns. He says nobody is talking about campaigns. We're not talking about elections here. So, you know, there has been a lot of speculation that there could be another federal election going on soon, but maybe not after hearing the opposition leader saying that nobody's talking about elections. You know, I'm not sure anymore how soon this would happen. You know, do you think there would be an election?
No, I think the Liberals are in a deep, deep, deep mire.
Right
now, they are so internally divided. This is the thing about the Liberals, though. They have the power.
Mm-hmm.
But you know when you have power for too long, and any party that has power for too long in any country, you have internal squabbles that bring them down. It's not like there's an external force that's bringing
that
them down.
Right.
Who's bringing them down?
It's from within the party.
It's coming from within.
Mm-hmm.
So they got issues that they haven't resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a problem for folks in Canada. You know, if they don't like Harper, what are you going to do if the Liberals are, you know, they're in a mess right now? So they're definitely not, I mean, the Liberals are not thinking about Canadians and what they're going through in the economy. They're thinking about their political situation right now. If they went to an election, they would be decimated, right? So they're not going to go. They're not thinking, well, we got to go because people need jobs.
Right.
We got to go because we really need to do something for folks. No, they're not going for their own self-interest.
Well, it's the polls. It's the poll numbers that they that I know the media focuses in on a lot. That's where it seems. That's where I think a lot of this is coming. A lot of this speculation that there could be an election is coming from these numbers that keep on coming up that are saying the liberals are moving up, the conservatives are falling, that they're now an equal. That if the election would happen, they'd get like equal seats or whatever. That you know who, but who knows?
But you know what? Let's go. Let's go. Let's call again. 416-979-5251 extension 0. It's a by-election is tomorrow right here in Toronto Centre. There's a by-election happening right here in Toronto Centre for everyone who lives here. Give us a call. Tell us what's going on. It's 416-979-5251, extension 0. The other interesting thing about politics is the media. Yeah. I have to say, watch the media and what comes out tomorrow on Thursday. Because on Thursday, papers come out.
Yeah.
Okay, say Now Magazine comes out tomorrow.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure if I comes out tomorrow, if it came out today. Mm-hmm. But the new issues that come out, watch for the headlines, because tomorrow is a by-election.
Yeah.
And nothing that comes out tomorrow, if it deals with the by-election, is going to be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see that each paper is going to show their bias very clearly.
Yeah, that's interesting if you can find that. The other paper that I know that came out today actually is the Ryerson paper, the eye-opener. I got a copy right here, and if anybody's around CKLN area, Toronto Centre, if anybody's a Ryerson student or around campus, you can pick up the eye-opener at a lot of spots around campus. And they got a feature spread here in the news section on the candidates, local candidates. So we named the NDP, the PC, and the Liberal candidates, and the Green candidate, I got his name right here, Stefan Premdas.
There we go.
Premdas.
There we go.
Stefan Premdas. Born in Trinidad, Tobago, and has lived in Toronto Centre for years. So he's talking about the sustainability of the environment and the economy. And this actually issue is would actually be interesting to students. They actually ask all four candidates about their about student issues. I guess that was the question, was on student issues. So any students might want to check out the eye opener.
And students who might be listening right now, call us at 416-979-5251 extension 0. This is your station. This is here at Ryerson. Give us a call, students. Tell us what's going on in education.
CKLN 88.1 FM. It is about 7:30 p.m., and we'll be right back. We just got a public service announcement to play right here. CKLN, word up, word of mouth.
One love for Haiti.
One love.
At the Cool House, 132 Queens Quay East, on Bob Marley's birthday, Saturday, February 6th, 9 p.m., featuring Consuls General from Haiti and Jamaica. 25 performers, including Rita Marley, Itana, Liberty Silver, Carvin Winans, Julie Black, Steel, Blessed, Jay Douglas, Soul to Soul, and more. Tickets $20 advance, $25 at the door. Tickets at Ticket Break, 1-866-9-GET-TIX, or onelovefortheity.com. Funds raised for Haiti to UNICEF and Perspective Entrade Humanitaire. Info 905-452-1911.
Word of mouth. We're back here on the show. Daniel Libby and Robin Nieto with some news, headlines of the day. We still got our phone lines open in case anybody out there listening wants to give us a call. You can give us a call.
We're going to keep them open.
At 416-979-5251, extension 0. And We got a few other. Go back to this. This we got this big election tomorrow, which I think we got to promote just because we haven't heard too much about it. And since we're a local radio station here in Toronto Centre, I think it would be. It'd be good to speak about it again. And we started off the show too with that interview with Edward Lance. Speaking about the issue of polling stations, I know I've been down to vote for a few times. I don't live in this area. I'm in Hyde Park, Parkdale, but it's pretty close. So I know Toronto. I guess I know a bit about Toronto voting. And you might even see more than the four candidates on your ballot. I'm not sure if there's some independent ones that have, or smaller party ones that have signed up too. They're not featured in this eye-opener article, though, that I'm looking at right here. You can look out for them, and hopefully, if you're a local resident, you would have already received your information on where you can vote. It is shocking, though, that a place like St. Jamestown wouldn't have their own polling station? Because I know that's one of the most condensed areas in all of Canada.
Yeah,
so
no,
many
it
people
is.
People live in there.
It is shocking and it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about, you know, low-income neighborhoods, there is very little attention paid to them in terms of investment, right? So programs, you know, for them, you name it, it isn't there. If you compare the schools in low-income neighborhoods with schools in high-income neighborhoods, there is no comparison. It's like living in a park and living, you know, in a concrete jungle, right? That's the difference. It's a huge difference. Because I grew up here in downtown Toronto in the 1970s when I was a kid. We didn't have a playground. We had no grass, right? We had no trees.
Concrete and cement.
It was a concrete jungle. Some people would say, you know, a concrete ghetto. But the rich always had the green.
Mm-hmm.
They always had the parks and they always had the programs. And even today, French immersion is not offered in low-income neighborhoods. Let's just be frank. Let's even talk a program for gifted children. You will not find in low-income neighborhoods. So is it surprising that, you know, our electoral authority wouldn't put in polls in the low-income neighborhood? If you don't put in anything else, why would you think that people are going to even go to the polls in poor neighborhoods? So essentially they're making an analysis and saying, it's not worth it to put it in there. We're not going to do it. So they're not looking at the people. They're looking at the consequences. If we don't put it in there, who's going to do anything about it?
Right. I guess that's even more of a reason, more important reason to vote, I guess. Get your voice out. Get your make sure that, you know, we get enough people voting that the politicians will hopefully be listening to the people.
Yeah, it's the first step. Voting is the first step. That's all it is. It's not the last step. It's the very first step that you take within a political or a society, let's say. Your very first one. But then you got to hold your politician that you elected, you got to hold their feet to the fire. And that takes another type of work, right?
Yep.
It's like that.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of responsibility involved.
Yeah.
But it means you got to be present in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You got to not think, well, one day I'm going to get out of here and ignore your situation and your conditions, right? Because one day I too will live in Rosedale. Or conversely, it's also not so wise to try to make your neighborhood into another Rosedale.
Mm-hmm.
Your neighborhood is what it is, and everybody in it is great. And all you need is to provide the basics that every human being needs for development, right? Education.
Right.
Healthcare, programs for development, you know, programs for children.
Right. Well, the
daycare, you know, all these things that if you think about a low-income neighborhood, they don't have. Would you want to be in an area like that doesn't have these things? Not really, right?
No. The other thing that we can look at here, because I got a few clips, is the Prime Minister of Canada, how he's representing Canada, and what he was saying at the major conference, the economic conference in Davos, Switzerland, that took place last weekend on the weekend. Now, what Stephen Harper outlined was his plan for the G20, and he got into some different terminology. He got into the economic crisis. Here's just briefly what he believes that the world leaders should be working on at the G20, which will be in Toronto.
Now, as we work through the final stages of the recession and embrace recovery, there are three critical areas where G20 actions have been and will remain vital: financial sector reform, stimulus programs, and global trade and growth strategies.
So that's what he is saying about that's basically the three areas that he outlined, and then he outlined those in more detail. So they're basically, there seem to be some pretty basic things going on. He basically talked about the global economic crisis, but here is where it got interesting when he talked about Canada's role in the global economy.
Once again, Canada was not a part of the problem. Canadian banks had maintained healthy leverage ratios and largely avoided exposure to toxic assets. No major Canadian financial institution failed, and none required bailouts from the government.
You know why I find that funny? Because this has now become... this is funny because this has now become something that's been accepted by folks that Canadian banks didn't need any bailouts because our regulatory system in Canada is so much different than the one in the U.S. Meanwhile, the Bank of Canada, from what I remember back then when the crisis was happening, the news, it was a very... These were small articles, though, that came out. These were not headlines.
Oh, they hide it all in the small articles on the side,
to say that they actually reported on it, right?
Right.
$15 billion, I do believe... That's what the Bank of Canada started out with for bank bailouts. And I do believe that they went higher, much higher. But I don't know if you remember, there was an international bank bailout fund where every country was putting in money to bail out banks on a worldwide level. Canada was involved in that. It's not like the government of Canada didn't put in billions upon billions of dollars. So when the government speaks this way, they're not telling the truth. That when Harper's talking this way, he is not telling the truth.
No, he's not giving, he's definitely not giving the full truth, because there was definitely money, federal money, going into the banks, and they had their own housing mortgage program, bailout program. They might have just set it up differently than the states. That might be part of how he's getting away with all this stuff. I mean, it gets okay. Let's just say
we have the lowest level of indebtedness in the G7 by far, and when the recession ends, our relative levels of indebtedness will still be lower by an even wider margin. That is because Canada paid off debt aggressively during the growth years. Now, in passing, as an economist, I must observe that this particular recommendation of John Maynard Keynes is seldom acted upon as vigorously as his permission to borrow. I would say that in this regard, Keynesianism is a bit like communism. According to those who advocate it, neither has been properly attempted. So thus, governments borrow when times are difficult because they must, and then they borrow more when times are easy because they can. But instead, true Keynesians that we are accused of being, our government paid $38 billion off Canada's national debt between 2006 and 2009. And that's, incidentally, is what allowed us to lower taxes in Canada. We believe it is important that taxes be low and that tax reductions be sustainable. That way they become a permanent form of fiscal stimulus. In an environment of falling debt, we were able to lower taxes of all kinds. In fact, Canada has already the lowest tax rate on new business investment in the G7. Investors take note, Canada is and will remain open for business.
So, I think that was basically a sale. I consider that a sales pitch by Harper.
Yeah, definitely.
He's trying to sell the capitalist Canada.
Well, it's not, the problem is that there is a capitalist Canada and then there is the globalized Canada. And a capitalist Canada, which was, let's say, 25 years ago, you can have Canadian capital, being invested into Canadian companies. Mm-hmm. Now you have, Canada's open for business. Come on. It's been open for business since we had free trade. Right. We didn't need an announcement that we're open for business. Our problem is that we don't have enough Canadian industries anymore. Right. So this is why I find Harper... My problem is I don't take them very seriously, right? I don't take what they have to say very seriously because they are, it's unfortunate, though, we all are focused on them as if they're the major and main problem when they're not, because their philosophy is the problem that they share with the liberals. Like, there's no difference between the two. So we got to try to get out of that situation, because if we go and say, that it's the conservatives are the problem, the liberals are the solution. Just look to Ontario here with our liberal government. They are not the solution because their philosophy is the problem. Their economics is the problem. When they cannot come up with economic solutions for folks where they can have jobs and there can be investment for each individual Canadian that lives in the country and provide them with solutions for their everyday problems, and they don't do this year in and year out, that is a major difficulty. So I believe that we are, at this moment in time in history in Canada, we are at an economic crisis that has also caused a political crisis. There are no answers coming from the two major national parties. There are none. Mm-hmm. And there are very little differences between, say, Ignatieff and Bush. Harper.
Right.
Very, very little difference.
Yeah.
Except I think Harper is, I think he did live here most of his life. Mm-hmm. While I think Ignatieff lived most of his life in the U.S.
Exactly. Well,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's a very difficult...
Harper's from Toronto. He's actually from Toronto, and he was a young liberal. That's another interesting...
That is interesting.
...in the start of Harper. But yeah, everyone thinks he's a guy from Calgary, conservative from Calgary. He was actually a Toronto liberal at one point, but those were his younger years. He's moved on to something else. This is our last clip of the Davos highlights, and this one I saved for last. Even though it was one of the first parts of his speech, I thought it's the most extreme, the interesting choice of terminology, I think, that Harper used to explain his plan for the G20. He outlines the G20, what he wants to accomplish, and he uses the strange phrase enlightened sovereignty. Well, here is how the Prime Minister of Canada explains the world G20, G8 goals of...
Recognized that a flood engulfing one would soon swamp them all. So even though 20-some leaders all represented sovereign states, they agreed to common and synchronized actions to chart the same course toward calmer waters. Ideological differences were set aside, old enmities were not raised. I would say this, if you had arrived from another planet, you could never have guessed which nations had spent decades mired in hostility. Now, you might call it the Fellowship of the Lifeboat. But ladies and gentlemen, in that brief parting of the veil, I saw world leadership at its best, a glimpse of a hopeful future, one where we act together for the good of all, the world we have been trying to build since 1945, the world we want for our children and grandchildren. It shows it can be done if we act together. And I call this enlightened sovereignty. And I believe our understanding in Washington, just in Washington, allowed us to avoid the cataclysm that otherwise really would have come to pass. But an agreement to act is just a start. It is acting on the agreement that matters. So when the G20 resumes in Toronto, the discussion should be less about new agreements than accountability for existing ones, less about lofty promises than real results, less about narrow self-interest in sovereignty's name than an expanded view of mutual interest in which there is room for all to grow and prosper. Enlightened sovereignty, then, the natural extension of enlightened self-interest.
Enlighten us, Daniel.
I think there was a lot said there in terms of the approach, I guess. The Prime Minister... He definitely mentioned their plan was centralized in Washington, their economic plan, centralized in Washington. And now in the G20, he's basically mentioning that he's not looking to do any new plans, he's just looking for accountability and stuff on regulations on their existing plans. So things that are already going on are going to be put forward in Canada. And then there was, I guess he went on in the speech to talk about something with child poverty and female poverty, world poverty.
Oh, yes. This is where Harper is winning points. Because
right.
We all know that, you know, the Conservative government has cut back its funding to NGOs by a lot. Some NGOs have lost their funding entirely. But this goes, you know, somewhat underreported. So it may have actually been reported. So he's come out with a new... He will be funding now programs to help children and mothers to try to lessen infant mortality and mortality of women at childbirth. Okay, how can you argue against that?
Right, you can't. But that's where Michael Ignatieff comes out in the paper today, saying that his big addition to that would involve supporting abortions overseas, which I thought was a bit surprising. It had to do with funding, making sure like there's clean and safe medical places for abortions overseas, which I thought was a bit surprising. I guess that's where he can attack the conservatives, because there are still a lot of ideological conservatives, even though apparently Harper has moved. You know, he apparently hasn't brought up that issue. You know, I remember last federal election, I actually interviewed the guy that's the head of the Christian Heritage Party, and that was his main sticking point against Harper, the main reason that he doesn't believe in Harper anymore, one of the main reasons that he doesn't believe in Harper anymore is because Harper, now that he's in power, refuses to bring up the abortion issue, because I guess as he was being elected, trying to come up as a conservative, he was ferociously against it. And now, I guess, as a politician, he won't. Maybe he won't say his true feelings. Who knows what he's actually thinking? That's a big issue, though. Maybe we should.
We got to explore
another show.
Yeah, we got to explore federal politics in a later show. We got to right now.
I just wanted to pull up one update here, because we did mention these bailouts, the Canada Bank bailouts.
That's right. Yeah.
And I got a headline here from Basics Community Newsletter. Basics Community Newsletter is a big newsletter. You can find them on the internet, basicsnewsletter.blogspot.com. I found the article from April 16th, 2009, and this was one of the most in-depth articles I've actually seen about Canada's bank bailout. And they have the headline here by Steve DeSilva: Canada's bank bailout, $275 billion and counting.
What?
$275 billion. He breaks it down. In late 2008, the government injected $75 billion into
Canadian
banking
system. There
we go.
That's the number that I was looking for. $75 billion.
And it's a program called the Insured Mortgage Purchase Program. So it's basically like the subprime one, the mortgage one that they put in the States. Similar one, I guess. And then there was, in the 2009 federal budget, approved an additional $200 billion in bailout money under a program called the Extraordinary Financing Framework, EFF. So extraordinary financing, could involve maybe anything, you know. They can put it under anything, maybe.
So there we go. So all of these falsehoods that the Canadian banks did not receive a bailout, and they're all false. Every single claim that came that they didn't receive it, they did, and they received it big. But you know, that's not the only thing. The other problem that the Conservatives have federally, and after this I'd like to go back to Toronto Centre Provincial, is EI. EI used to have a surplus of $54 billion. It was a huge issue, EI, for a long time. Mm-hmm. But it was never made into a major issue, right? If the media wanted to make it a major issue, they could have made it a major issue. If the media wanted to make student debt a major issue, they could make student debt a major issue, but they have decided not to, right? So the problem now with EI is you have the one of the highest numbers of Canadians right now claiming EI, and one of the lowest numbers in terms of actual money available for EI. Because at one point they had a $54 billion surplus. They spent $52 billion, this federal government. Mm-hmm. This is why they said that they had, they had no deficit. They had balanced their books, blah, blah, blah. All on workers' money. Now, when the workers need it, they only have $2 billion left in EI. Right? And now they're calling. See, the problem is the federal government, given all the tax cuts they've given to banks and to corporations, to foreign companies, most likely, they took away the actual capacity of the government to pay for things like employment insurance when workers, when they're out of work and when they need, their income. They are incapable now of being able to sustain more numbers of people on EI without borrowing money again. So that's a problem when you take money from EI and there's no legislation to protect money that workers pay into. Because when you go to work, you put in each paycheck, you get a deduction that goes to your insurance for your employment. The government can take that money and do what it likes with it. And this is what the Liberals started federally with Paul Martin and what Harper continued. And so now the EI fund, I believe, is only $2 billion. That is not enough to sustain folks, like the number of folks that will be out of work in the future, because, again, federal policies that do not allow Canadian companies to flourish in Canada, which is what we need. So anyway, let's go back to provincial politics, because we're here in Toronto Centre, and the by-election is going to happen tomorrow.
Yes.
So the number to call in is 416-979-5251, extension 0. 416-979-5251, extension 0. It's the Toronto Centre by-election. We brought up a lot of different political topics, federally and provincially, to see if we can get some discussion going, just because tomorrow is a by-election here, and see what you think. So 416-979-5251. And I think we'll leave it to Libby now to play some tunes.
Oh, yeah. Let's just, what do we got here to play? We can go into a, well, maybe I'll just play a bit of a, here, I'll play the bit of this rally clip because I brought it.
Free Mumia!
Free Mumia Abu Jamal. Free Mumia Abu Jamal rally that took place in 2008, the spring of 2008. Here are some words from the street, the United Front to Free Mumia Abu Jamal.
Which has been particularly active in building these protests on the campuses, Tainan.
Mumia, a former Black Panther and a supporter of the MOVE organization, has been known for years as the voice of the voiceless. It is precisely that voice that the racist rulers want to silence, and we will not let that happen.
Our next speaker, on behalf of the Black Action Defense Committee, Owen Leach.
Brothers and sisters, Mumia is clearly a political prisoner. The United States has the temerity to go around saying that they don't have political prisoners, but every other country has political prisoners. It's the big lie.
On behalf of Socialist Action, I'm pleased to bring militant solidarity greetings to this rally demanding freedom for Mumia Abu Jamal and abolition of the racist death penalty. The stakes are now much higher for Mumia, both because of the rejection of his appeal for a new trial and because of the U.S. Supreme Court decision which upholds the state of Kentucky's method of execution by lethal injection. That is what Pennsylvania authorities seek to apply to Mumia. So his life is now literally at stake. And that's why we have to step up our efforts to free him immediately.
Free Mumia!
Some would say a man of color, a Black man, a member of the Black Panthers, a Black activist. And while all may be true, he was still is a man who was and is active on behalf of his people. A man watched by the police, set up by the police, and victimized by the police. There is a song of freedom for the Cuban Five. There is a song of freedom for all indigenous peoples across the world who stand and fight for their people in our jails. There is a song of freedom for Mumia Abu Jamal.
Free Mumia!
My name is Jamshid Hadian. International Committee Against Execution, whose main focus of work is saving the lives of those condemned to death in Iran, is against execution of any human being anywhere in the world. Free Mumia now!
We are here protesting the false charging and the wrongful arrest of Mumia Abu Jamal. This man was brave enough to fight oppression. The capitalist state responds with police force whenever it feels threatened by dissent. This can be seen with the criminalization of our indigenous brothers and sisters, our immigrant brothers and sisters, and all other political prisoners under the capitalist regime.
The same government that is holding Mumia Abu Jamal gave the South African apartheid regime, not Nelson Mandela, atomic bombs. Mumia Abu Jamal would be the person that would tell you that. There's a nice story in the New African magazine that deals with that. Mumia Abu Jamal is a journalist. Mumia Abu Jamal is younger than I am, but Mumia Abu Jamal is a model for me.
Free Mumia! This is the labor and minorities have the power. Free Mumia. This is the hour. Labor and minorities have the power. Mumia is innocent. Free him now. Mumia is innocent. Free him now. Mumia is innocent. Free him now. Mumia is innocent. Free him now.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here. That was just some highlight clips there from the rally that took place in 2008. We had played that segment in past shows the week after it had happened, but it was good to play that today since we had started off the show with the Mumia Abu-Jamal commentary, and since that is still a major issue now with a new president and there's a new attorney general in the United States, but Mumia is at the he's after the Supreme Court throughout the last appeal, it seems like he's at a very serious juncture right now, again in his case on death row. Just wanted to wrap up the show here. Got Robin in the booth
saying good night, and thanks for listening to Wednesday Word of Mouth here on CKLN 88.1 FM.
Word of mouth. Word up. This is our show for Wednesday, the 3rd of February, 2010. And just before we get to our next show featuring the Blue Remedy with the Blues Doctor, Julie Hill, I just wanted to read out a few events. Also, just want to thank Victor Baines Marshall quickly for hosting the show, The Middle Passage, before us. Sometimes we forget to thank Victor when we get in here, so always good to hear from Victor before we get on the air. Some events going on Friday, February 5th. It's Caesar Ryerson Students Union, U of T Students Union, York Federation of Students present a Students for Haiti benefit hip-hop concert at the El Macambo, 464 Spadina Street, south of college. Doors at 9 p.m., the El Macambo, show at 10 p.m., admission, pay what you can, suggested donation, $10 to $20, featuring Bishop, Decisive, Mindbender, Moonshine, Rich Kid, DJ Dopey, and hosted by MC Muhammad Ali. Music, raffle, silent auction, and more this Friday. The funds go to the partners in healthpih.org. Benefit for Haiti this Friday, February, at El Macambo. And then Sunday, there's a rally called Where Are the Children? Where is Justice? 10 a.m. in front of the Metropolitan United Church, 56 Queen Street East. Rally by the friends and relatives of the disappeared Toronto branch. You can get more info on that event at socialistproject.ca/events. And then Tuesday, February 9th, 2010, Revolution on My Mind, Black Power in the 1960s. Next Tuesday at 7 p.m. at the Bahrain Center, room 214 at 40 St. George Street at the U of T, featuring speaker Norman Otis Richmond, the journalist, radio producer, and former member of the Executive Committee of the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, and Carolyn Egan from the International Socialist, organized by the U of T International Socialist. More info at socialist.ca on the event next Tuesday, Revolution on My Mind, Black Power in the 60s. And that is our show for the Word of Mouth Wednesday, February 3rd, 2009. Thank, again, Robin Nieto. Thank Edward Lance for the quick interview at the start of the show. And thank everyone for listening to the show today. My name is Dan Libby, and that's it. Word up, word of mouth, word out, word is bond. Peace.